If you have your Bibles, let me invite you to go ahead and open them up to the book of Proverbs. We're going to be over there in just a moment, Proverbs chapter 7. I want to reference a couple of other passages, but the bulk of what we'll do is here in the book of Proverbs. In Philippians chapter 2, Paul, writing to that church, says to those Christians, do everything without complaining or arguing, so that you may become blameless and pure. That was the goal. Children of God, without fault, in a crooked and depraved generation in which you shine like stars in the universe. We're going to talk about holiness and purity tonight. And holiness is really a habit that begins with a resolve. It's the kind of resolve that we read about several times in Scripture, the kind of resolve that Joseph made, the kind of resolve that Daniel made. You remember when Daniel was taken captive? He and his friends were taken to another nation. They were placed in a privileged position in the king's palace. And with the change of culture and the change of his very name, he was placed in a vulnerable position. But in the early part of that book, we read that Daniel resolved not to defile himself as pertains to the food and the drink in that new nation. Without such a resolve, I'm convinced it would have only been a matter of time before his values and his commitments as a Jewish young man would have eroded and would have been swallowed up by the Babylonian culture in which he now was residing. There's probably no area in our lives where there is a greater need for holy living in this world than in the area of our sexuality. And so I want to talk particularly about that area of holiness, that area of purity. And a lot of times, older members of the congregation say, you know, we need more sermons like that for these guys down front, because they're facing all these difficulties in life and the peer pressure and all. But I'll tell you, from my experience, it's needed at just about every age. I see folks who have been married, who've been Christians for years, who are still falling prey to sexual sin. It's something that is needed throughout our life's journey as Christians. So I'm going to be talking to you guys, but I'm going to be talking to the rest of you tonight just as clearly. I think there are a lot of reasons for the struggles that we face today, one of which that we may not realize is that women have entered the workforce in the last generation like no generation before. And many of these women have gone into areas where they've been traditionally male-dominated fields, and work weeks have grown longer, and relationships have increasingly been built around the workforce. And so in an environment like this, is it any surprise that extramarital affairs have flourished? It's not enough to be a Christian and simply know what the right thing to do is, because even those that I've known and that you've known that have been strong and stood strong for years have fallen. Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 10:12, "Let him who thinks he stands take heed, lest he fall." And I am convinced that given the right circumstances, the right situation, the right timing, none of us are above sexual sin. God's standards, however, are clear. He has said very clearly in the beginning, Exodus 20:14, in the Decalogue there, "You shall not commit adultery." And then he goes on to delineate all forms of sexual immorality. Adultery is for married folks. Fornication is for single folks. How do you avoid opening the door to sexual immorality? That's often all it takes, just a tiny little opening. And Satan gets his foothold there, and soon the door is open completely. Here in Proverbs, there is a case study of a young man who took the bait of Satan and ended up falling to his own detriment. And I think it's useful for us to do a post-mortem on this example. It's a bad example. It's an example of what not to do, but by looking at this, I hope that we can be motivated to take the steps that are necessary to maintain purity in our relationships, in our lives, in our marriages, if you're married, whatever path you're on at this stage of life. Look here in chapter 7, beginning in verse 1. My son, keep my words and store up my commands within you. Keep my commands and you will live. Guard my teachings as the apple of your eye. Bind them on your fingers. Write them on the tablet of your heart. Say to wisdom, you are my sister, and to insight, you are my relative. They will keep you from the adulterous woman, from the wayward woman with her seductive words. Now, I don't need to tell you that we can change the word there from woman to man just as equally, because there are men seducers as well as women seducers. There's a need for warning here, and anytime there's a need for warning, that implies there is a very real danger out there. There are, and you know this, adulterers and adulteresses in every workplace in the nation. They're friendly, and they're charming, and they're sympathetic, and they're willing to listen. They even exist in churches across our nation. And Satan will use them to drag down anyone who claims allegiance to God, because he's out to destroy. He goes on to say here in verse 6 of chapter 7, at the window of my house, here's this young man, and we're going to see his downfall. At the window of my house, I looked down through the lattice. I saw among the simple, I noticed among the young men, a youth who had no sense. He was going down the street near her corner, walking along in the direction of her house at twilight as the day was fading, as the dark of night set in. This young man is described as one who lacked judgment, who had no sense. I translate that as a young person who has made no resolve. Daniel made a resolve. Remaining sexually pure requires such a resolve in any relationship. And I would encourage young couples, as you begin to get serious in a dating relationship, early on in that relationship, you need to have this conversation. You need to make a mutual resolve that you will keep your relationship pure until marriage. Remaining sexually pure is a little bit like going on a diet. I've got to decide before I get to the table what I can and what I can't eat. If I wait until I'm there, it's too late. To enter a situation with an open mind is to lose the battle before the battle ever begins. And so to the couples that are here tonight, let me just say this. Sexual faithfulness always begins with emotional unfaithfulness. That's why it's so vital to keep the relationship alive, keep the romance alive in your relationship. That's what vows are for. For those of you that are here and that are married, that have taken that step, you made a resolve the day you were married. You were asked the question, do you promise to keep yourself to him or to her only until death do you part? And you said yes. He goes on to describe the downfall of this foolish young man. In verse 10, then out came a woman to meet him, dressed like a prostitute and with crafty intent. She is unruly and defiant. Her feet never stay at home. Now in the street, now in the squares, at every corner she lurks. She took hold of him and kissed him. And with a brazen face she said, today I fulfilled my vows and I have food from my fellowship offering at home. So I came out to meet you. I looked for you and I found you. I have covered my bed with colored linens from Egypt. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let's drink deeply of love till morning. Let's enjoy ourselves with love. My husband is not home. He's gone on a long journey. He took his purse filled with money and will not be home until the full moon. Oh, this woman came on like a hurricane. She's offering every inducement to lure this young man into her bedroom. And let me tell you, there is a point of no return with sexual temptation. If you allow yourself to be drawn in, there is a point at which you will lose the willpower to turn and to flee sexual immorality, as Paul said. If you put yourself in harm's way and you get in far enough, you will lose the willpower to turn. Now, some argue that they're strong enough to resist that kind of a situation and not fall. Well, there's another consideration in all of this. You may be strong enough to withstand more than the average person can. But what would the situation look like if it were viewed by someone who didn't know the context? We need to always be aware of how things look. I'm a married man. Maybe I could go out and have dinner some evening with an attractive young lady and we could be completely innocent in doing that. But what would that look like if someone from church came and they saw me out somewhere like that in an intimate setting with someone else? You see, as Christians, we must not only do the right thing, but we must be seen to do the right thing. One of the things that the elders in their wisdom did, we asked them, you know, to be sure and do this. When that wing was built over there where our offices are, we asked them to be sure and put windows in all the office doors. Now, that wasn't to get more sunlight in, and that wasn't for aesthetic purposes. It was so that we don't do anything behind closed doors that's completely out of sight of someone who passes by. And I'll tell you, I know more preachers who have fallen into sexual immorality through counseling situations than almost any other way. Happens all the time. Someone who, out of the goodness of their heart, is trying to help some lady who is in a bad marriage, and she comes in and pours her heart out, and he offers sympathy, and one thing leads to another. And I've told this story before, but it bears repeating. A preacher friend of mine who lived in Memphis, preached for one of the other congregations there. He began a counseling situation with a deacon's wife in the congregation. And he fell prey to this very sin. And they got involved in a relationship, and it became such a strong relationship that neither one of them would do the right thing. They wouldn't turn around. The husband found out about it. And during one of the Sunday morning church services, as the preacher was standing there before the congregation, he stood up on the back row with a big poster board, and it said, "I know what you're doing with my wife." Now, I tell you, that'll interrupt a sermon, I can guarantee. Two families were destroyed, and it robbed the church of a capable minister of the gospel. 2 points for the devil. Look what he says in verse 21 here. "With persuasive words she led him astray. She seduced him with her smooth talk. All at once he followed her like an ox going to the slaughter, like a deer stepping into a noose, till an arrow pierces his liver, like a bird darting into a snare, little knowing that it will cost him his life." All at once. That's the moment of compromise. That's the moment when finally the corner is turned and an individual gives in to this temptation, blinded to the consequences. We don't get a clear picture of how this story ends. Talks here in the end about it costing him his life. And very often that happens. A husband comes home too soon, and there's a domestic dispute, and violence occurs, and life is lost. Maybe his sin was discovered by the community, the Jewish community in which he lived, and a stoning took place. Perhaps he contracted a disease and slowly wasted away. You see, all sin has consequences. And you may say, you know, I sowed my wild oats back when I was young, and I partied and I slept around and I did all that. But now I'm married, and that didn't hurt anything. Let me tell you, even if you bypass disease or pregnancy or some of the other consequences, you can never, ever empty your memory banks. And so often those memories will rob you of present happiness in a good relationship in the most intimate moments of your marriage. It all begins with a resolve. Solomon had it right when he wrote those words at the end of Ecclesiastes in chapter 12, verse 1. He said, "Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come, and the years approach when you will say, 'I find no pleasure in them.'" I heard about a youth minister who talked to a group of the young men at a retreat, and they were talking about this very issue, about maintaining sexual purity as they move through the teenage years, and the topic came up, how far do you go with a girl when you begin dating, and you're car dating, and you're out, and you're alone? How far do you go physically in that dating relationship? And the youth minister asked one of the young men who was posing that question, he said, "Well, are you planning on marrying her?" The young man said, "No." He said, I'm just on a date with her." And he said, "Well, do you plan to marry someone someday?" And the young man said, "Sure I do. I hope I do." And he said, "Well, somewhere out there is the girl that you one day will marry. And how far would she want you to go with this date you've got tonight?" And he said, I see what you say." He said, "No, I'm not through." He said, "Whoever that girl is that is out there somewhere that you will marry one day, you think it might just be possible that she also has a date this Friday night and that she'll be going out with some guy?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "How far do you want him to go with her, with your future wife?" You see, it's so important as young people to guard your virginity. It is the most precious gift you will bring into your marriage one day. And to be able to bring that gift intact into your marriage and offer that as a gift to your partner is rare, but oh so beautiful. And married folks, you guard the vows that you made before God the day you promised to be faithful unto death. God does not take lightly broken vows. We're going to sing a song. It's not like a lot of the songs in our book, because it's actually it's a prayer. And we usually speak most of our prayers, but tonight we're going to sing this prayer all together. And let me just read through the words of it. It's a prayer asking of God that He will help us maintain pure hearts. "Purer in heart, O God, help me to be. May I devote my life wholly to Thee. Watch Thou my wayward feet." And boy, we've all got them, don't we? "Guide me with counsel sweet. Purer in heart, help me to be. Purer in heart, O God, help me to be. Teach me to do Thy will most lovingly. Be Thou my friend and guide. Let me with Thee abide. Purer in heart, help me to be." And then the last verse, "Purer in heart, O God, help me to be. That I Thy holy face one day may see. Keep me from secret sin. Reign Thou my soul within. Purer in heart, help me to be." Lowell read that passage from 1 John chapter 3 at the very beginning tonight. And I want to read it again. John says, "Dear friends, now we are children of God, and what we will be has not yet been made known. But we know that when Christ appears, we shall be like Him, for we shall see Him as He is." And then he makes this statement, "One day we're going to be like Jesus. We'll see Him as He is. Therefore, all who have this hope," everyone who's a Christian looks forward to the coming of Jesus, "all who have this hope in Him purify themselves just as He is pure. You know, that's our goal. One day you're going to be just like Jesus. And our responsibility as we leave this life, as we live this life, is to grow in our purity, in our holiness, grow into the likeness of Jesus. Let me invite you tonight. I know that this is not the kind of sermon where we typically offer an invitation to respond for prayer and all, but if you're here and you want to have us pray for you, we'll gladly do that. But I especially want to ask everyone here to respond right where you stand. And I want you to open your heart to God. And I want to ask you to be very sincere in the words you're about to pray to God in this matter of purity. And so we want to stand together at this time, and Sean will lead us in this prayer song.